Welcome to the CyberCube podcast. This episode is part of our CyberVision series where we explore the future of cyber insurance through expert insight, innovation, and thought leadership. I'm your host, Rhianna Mistry, content specialist at CyberCube, and today we'll be discussing insurance-linked securities, or ILS, and more specifically, cyber catastrophe bonds. I'm joined by Brittany Baker, CyberCube's Head of Solution Consulting, and Juan Marcano, CyberCube's Alternative Risk Transfer Principal. Thank you for being here. Could you both introduce yourselves?
I'm Brittany Baker. I'm the Head of Solution Consulting at CyberCube. Solution Consulting is the team of subject matter experts from insurance through cybersecurity that really are market-facing for us here at CyberCube, helping potential partners get to know us, helping clients really dig deep and use our models and everything. And one of the things that I am most excited about on a day-to-day basis is I'm the executive sponsor of our ILS work.
Hi, Juan Marcano. I'm principal alternative risk transfer at CyberCube, and my role is to engage with the capital markets and investors in order to help them understand the nuances of cyber risk and potential cyber cat bonds.
Great, thank you. Let's just jump right in. Brittany, could you start us off with this one? What's the biggest misconception about cyber catastrophe bonds?
Well, I think the first one is that cyber can't be modeled.
Absolutely.
I think that is a huge misconception for folks who haven't really dug into the details of a cyber risk model, a cyber catastrophe model. And then I think the second one would be that they're all fully correlated with each other. And if an event happens, they're all going to be triggered. Juan, would you add any nuance or a different one there?
So, no, absolutely. Me being relatively new to cyber risk, that was the first question I posed to cyber risk experts. How do you go about modeling cyber risk? Coming from traditional NatCat, learning about a completely new underlying risk was, at the beginning, a daunting task. But once you start breaking it down into digestible pieces, you understand that not only it is possible, but it actually makes sense to go about it that way.
So some in the industry might consider cyber risks pretty new in the ILS space. What lessons can you take from natural catastrophe ILS to cyber, if there are any?
So new is a label that I don't quite agree with, that even though cyber catastrophe bonds have been in the market just for a few years, doesn't mean that the industry has not looked at them for a significant amount of time. There has been talk of cyber cat bonds for over a decade. There have been false dawns, and finally, a couple of years ago, a few sponsors decided that now was the time. They had the confidence in the modeling, the confidence in their portfolio and on the risk appetite, and decided to go out to market.
Yeah, I think also when you look at cyber risk, just the nature of the risk is very similar to NatCat in that you have these catastrophic systemic events that look very different than the attritional events. And you can create that very specific coverage for them. And so that's why it's been appealing, to Juan's point. It's been a topic of conversation for a long time, even if we were waiting for more of the pieces to kind of fall into place for the first ones to come to market. I think the other piece that is very similar too is the diversification that investors could get. You know, we've seen recent volatility in the market. A lot of movement in ways that people may or may not have expected. And one of the few places that was quite stable were cat bonds. And there was no difference in reporting or movements that we could see between NatCat and cyber. They both remain stable.
Yes. So carrying on the line of thought that this new underlying risk represents a diversifying asset for investors, I had conversations with some of the largest investors, institutional investors that there are, and they see cyber as a good diversifying risk. at the moment, it represents significant or very attractive returns for an asset class that it is completely uncorrelated to the rest of their portfolio. So that is a huge plus for this asset class.
I think the last piece too that I'll just add is, as much as the underlying risks are very different, as you get into the models, the details are quite different. The overall frameworks are super similar. So as you're going to investors who have, you know, Nat Cat experience in-house and a long period of understanding those models, once you break down the framework, you have folks go, okay, that looks familiar. That is a really good foundation for me to start building my own knowledge and build off of. And so that's a really great place to be coming from. We don't have to try to explain this whole new framework of modeling to folks who are just starting to think about cyber risk, or who might have been thinking about it, but not necessarily brought the in-house expertise yet.
So this is something the industry is more aware of now. If we do look back at the last cybercat bond transactions that have occurred, there was an initial $415 million worth of investment in 2023. Since then, this looks like it's slowed down with fewer transactions. Would you agree with that? Is there still resistance in the market?
I mean, with any emerging market, you're not going to have this nice, beautiful, straight upward line in growth from day one. So I don't think it's surprising that we're going to see different offerings each year and not just like 4 and 5 and 6 and 7. You definitely have other market movements that need to be taken into account. So we saw a softening primary market. Reinsurance might be softening now, but that obviously was delayed, and that makes sense. We saw a bit more non-proportional coverage being offered in the reinsurance market. So that's going to necessarily take some focus there. So yeah, we've definitely seen a slower, you know, 2024 into 2025 after that first like nice big explosion. But I think that's all kind of par for the course. I don't know, Juan, I'd love to hear how you're thinking about it.
Absolutely. You have to take this into context, because it's not only the softening of the market, it's also the rate of growth and penetration of cyber insurance, that it hasn't materialized as fast as people were initially anticipating. So that also has an impact on their eagerness or the need for sponsors to reach out to capital markets. You also have to take into consideration that the primary carriers and those who potentially will be looking at capital markets to help with sharing this risk are becoming more comfortable and familiar with this risk. And they're finding other ways to more efficiently mitigate the potential risk of a systemic event within their own balance sheet. So these are all factors that go against a cat bond, but that doesn't mean that the curiosity and the need for these particular tools has diminished. It's just a step on the evolution of a new market. If you look back at the history of when natural catastrophe bond first started, it was not, as Brittany say, a nice steady growth. It was very bumpy at the beginning, with a few issuances in the first year, then one or two, and then 6, 7, 8. So until we reach a level of volume and also ease of transaction that allows for that steady flow of deals.
Yeah, I was just going to add, I think, Juan, you put it really nicely in that we'll see this market continue to grow in the future. You know, if you look at any kind of cyber insurance total market projections, it's slated to get quite large in the next 5, 10, 15 years. And in order to build that sustainable market, ILS will play a significant role there. And so you'll see different sponsors coming to the table, different structures, new ways of thinking about it. And as Juan said, curiosity remains high. There are folks that are really thinking about what this will mean to them and their businesses as we move forward. So just because we didn't see a super busy 2024 doesn't mean that there aren't people putting their ducks in a row behind the scenes.
Absolutely. And to that point, there are new entrants into the market that don't have some of the constraints that the established traditional players have, because they're going to market to raise funds right now when cyber, it is already an available asset that it was not 5 years ago. So there are folks out there that are raising new funds. There are even established institutions that are thinking about opening new funds where cyber risk will be part of the mandate. And that is key for the development of these.
So all those people behind the scenes getting their ducks in a row, what does that involve? Is that more to do with modeling? Do you see innovations in modeling that will affect that?
I think modeling is always one piece of it, for sure. I think it's folks looking at where their growth aspirations are and the books that they want to have in 5, 10, 15 years, what that looks like, and then thinking through, well, what structure makes sense? You know, is it an all-risk cat bond? Is it ILWs? What types of structures kind of fit their goals? And then along those lines, who else do they need to be working with? I think it's getting comfortable with the models. I think it is understanding all the other roles. You know, there are obviously groups who have done a lot of work in the NatCat space and they have full teams built out to handle that and they're comfortable with it. And then there are groups who are maybe less experienced. And so they need to get to know the structuring agents and all of the different players and the mechanics and the pricing of it all in order to kind of plot out their future strategy. So it's going to depend on who's thinking about it. There are also folks I know internally at certain companies who really want to get involved and do this, and they're selling it to their bosses and their teams of like, this is a really good tool in our toolkit down the road. And so you're obviously, as with any company, going to have the internal politics of it all and really selling a vision.
And I think something key is that we need to understand or need to be realistic about the size of this particular market. I mean, cyber continues to be a relatively small part of the insurance sector. It is growing at a steady pace and a fast pace, but it still represents roughly 1% of the total written premium of P&C if you compare them side by side. So it is growing. It's going to grow at a significant pace. I mean, I think it was Munich Re that said that they expect the premium to double in the next 5 years. So it is a significant asset class. It is a significant risk that is going to grow, but it's still a small part of this whole ecosystem. As some asset manager representative told me a couple of years back, cyber is really interesting. We want to get into this, but I do need to take care of my day job. My day job is the traditional market. Cyber is very, very interesting side business at the moment, but we aim to become the day job of many, many participants in the industry.
Earlier, you both said that a big misconception to cyber cat bonds is not being able to model cyber. So how have modeling solutions, including cyber cubes, helped bring these transactions to fruition?
More than helping in the transactions, I think we provide the market as a whole with a steady and reliable view of what cyber risk is. I think that is our primary role in all this ecosystem. We have gained the confidence of a significant portion of the market to represent and quantify cyber risk in a reasonable fashion. Not everybody agrees with us. Some people say that we're too conservative. Some people say that we're not conservative enough, but we have established our view of risk. And with the panel of experts that we have on staff, I think the credibility we have achieved in the amount of time that we have achieved it is nothing but remarkable.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it, Juan. We want to be good stewards of this industry and this market, and we do that through our models. We need to do that in a transparent, steady, professional manner. You know, we are the folks who think about cyber risk every day. Juan just made a point where for some folks in this market, it is their side hustle. They have a day job, which is taking care of bigger pieces of their book of business. And then they're involved in cyber as a growing future business. That's not everyone, but there are definitely folks. And for us, we breathe this day in and day out. And so putting together our expertise, having that strong view of risk, sharing it with the market, and making sure anyone who wants to understand it can. Anyone who wants to use our model can own the results in that they can understand it and explain it through their own point of view as well is really important. And we're always thinking about that as we look to future iterations of the model and making sure we maintain that view of risk. We are a steady hand for this market because that's the foundation on which we can continue growing together. So, I think that's how CyberCube not only helps the ILS market, but helps cyber insurance in general.
I do want to expand on market reception a bit more. Now that CyberCube has participated in these bonds, has investor perception evolved? Have you found these conversations have changed?
Yes, absolutely. So we've been fortunate enough to be part of almost every transaction that has taken place in the insurance and security space to date in some capacity. And it was remarkable to see how the nature of the questioning moved from being fully concentrated on the model and the confidence that we had on the work that we were carrying out on the initial interactions with the market. And towards the end of the initial period of issuances, the shift moved from potential investors asking about CyberCube and their model more to concentrate on the structure of the transaction itself. I would like to think that this was because we did a really good job explaining how our model worked, but I also think that it was a case of, okay, this is the fifth time we've spoken to you guys in the last 3 months. So now we know what you're going to say. I don't know, Brittany, you were part of those conversations as well, if you had a different take.
It definitely was, I think, one of the most validating conversations towards, you know, as we got closer to 1-1, was getting on an investor call and having someone be like, hi, Brittany, hi, Juan, no questions. Moving on, let's go to the next piece. And that was certainly validating. I think definitely from the discussions, you know, at the end of 2023, going into those 1-1 transactions, but also really just spoke to the CyberCube kind of road shows that we did the couple of years prior as well, of just heading out to New York, London, Zurich, Bermuda, and meeting folks. And you know, when Juan first came on, it was, we'll grab a coffee. Like you said earlier, cyber is interesting. It'll probably be something we do in a few years too. All right, give me a demo. All right, here's my questions. All right, let me see your documentation. We're going to sign up for the model, like various forms of those conversations. So yeah, I would definitely say it was really great to see that comfort. And then the questions you do get are either about the structure itself and how the CyberCube modeling had to reflect that structure or that sponsor specifically, or they were like very high level, sophisticated questions about very specific pieces of our model. So it was clear that person already had the foundations, had the basics, knew the model, and now had this like really interesting question that they were coming up with and had thought about it and put in the time. So I think that is just, it was a really good feeling to see that kind of progress throughout the years, culminating in those, you know, first public cat bonds that came out.
Now, it is also very important to highlight that as much progress as we have made, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
There are some very important asset managers that are still hesitant. They still consider that the models have some development to do. And not only the model vendors, but also the industry as a whole needs to improve in the way that they are providing and sharing the information. That famous feedback loop of claims and the underwriting and events, et cetera, et cetera. That, I think, still we have some growing up to do as an industry as a whole, but there is definitely a very significant sophistication and pace of development that is not comparable to the traditional natural catastrophe early years. I think we've moved a lot faster. And thanks to the pressure of the industry being used to the level of sophistication and detail that they get with natural catastrophes, we've been pushed into the deep end, and just trying to stay afloat made us achieve as much as we have as an industry.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like you said, there's still a road to go down. There's still a journey to be had in the growth of this industry and the maturity of this industry. Obviously, one of the topics that continues to come up as well, you know, we haven't seen the big one yet. We haven't seen it truly play out. And so at CyberCube, we do validate our CAT model, and we're really the only ones that do this in a concrete, data-driven way in which we break down our model into different pieces and compare it to what's going on out in the real world. So even if it isn't the big one, we can look at the smaller systemic events that are happening and make sure that our model is reflecting that reality. We also do a lot of counterfactual analyses. We saw events and they were X amount of dollars, but what if certain small things had gone differently? You know, what if the person hadn't accidentally stumbled upon the key that shut down the attack? What if they had gone after a slightly different type of technology? And so that really helps us get comfortable. That's what helps the industry get comfortable. That's what helped investors get comfortable with the CyberCube model and our foundations. But they are still waiting to see that big event happen, not just for the modeling of it all, but the reporting of it all and the structures and making sure it all kind of moves in the way that it's set up to, which we get to see happen in the NatCat world multiple times a year as events are happening. And we haven't had that proof point yet. So it'll be interesting to see when that truly happens.
So if a listener is interested in investing or issuing a CyberCat bond, where should they start?
Well, getting the adequate approvals, of course, but reaching out to some of the established structuring agents out in the market and having that initial discussion, I think, is paramount. Many potential sponsors, I think, err on the side of caution and try to wait for, you know, the market to develop a bit more before they feel confident enough to take that step forward and embark in one of these processes, because let's face it, it's not straightforward. It is very expensive, and you have to get it right. So this is not something that you decide on a whim. So proper planning, I think, is a must. You most definitely need to talk to your capital markets team and ask them for help in this particular process. As for investors, get familiar with the underlying risk. Try to make as little assumptions as possible. Get familiar with how the risk is quantified. How is this cyber risk defined? How can you model it? We're more than happy to answer the kind of questions. I think that's part of our day job.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to add on that last point that Juan brought up, you know, if there is someone listening who is interested in cyber risk that hasn't had a conversation with us, whether it's an investor, a potential sponsor, we are always happy to sit down and talk through the models, since that is such a big foundational piece of any strategy. And we enjoy it. You know, those conversations are fun for us. And we really like taking someone through that journey that might start skeptical, cyber can't be modeled, too much uncertainty through, okay, I see what you're doing here. I can work with this. Those are fun conversations for us.
And on top of that, I think now is the time to really get into the details of it, because as there aren't that many cyber cat bonds out there, and this is a relatively new asset class, we at CyberCube want to dedicate the time to help people understand these properly. A few years down the road, when everybody's more familiar, then we will start making assumptions that people will have the basics covered, and we're going to start at a much higher level of sophistication with our material, our explanations, et cetera, et cetera. So I think now is the time to get familiar with this.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the CyberCube podcast, where we break down cyber risk, insurance, and everything in between. If you enjoyed today's conversation, make sure to subscribe on your preferred listening platform and tune in for the next episode. And don't forget to check out www.cybercube.com or find us on LinkedIn or X for extra content and updates. Until next time, stay informed, stay resilient, and keep shaping the future of cyber insurance.